Hello, everybody, and welcome to Karate Cafe's podcast, the first podcast on the internet by and for martial artists. No pretense or arrogance here, just a variety of hopefully humorous and interesting topics that martial artists can relate to. This is podcast number 27, recorded on June 25th, 2006. I'm Gene Myers, a student of Shorinru Shorinkan Karate and Two Circle Jiu-Jitsu, and with me for this edition is Pete Shambo, who also studies Shorinru Shorinkan, and Paul Wilson, a student of Shorinru Kenshinkan Karate. How's it going, guys?
Hey, Gene, how's it going tonight?
Great, Gene, how are you today?
Oh, fine, thanks. Thanks for joining us today. Pete, what's our topic for tonight?
Well, tonight we thought we'd talk about different characters that we have to deal with. Well, and we'll call it interpersonal relationships in the dojo. How you deal with other people. Not everybody's perfect like us. We have people that don't train as hard as we think they should. We have people that train maybe a lot harder and a lot more aggressive than we think they should. I'm talking about the type of person who, when you're doing a slow agreement sparring, will say, well, I can counter that. Of course they can, because you're going slow. And then they'll tell you how, you know, what your deficiencies are, even if they're three belts lower than you. Then we've got the people that kind of have an aura about them when they come into the dojo, and the aura only gets stronger. That type of thing that we're gonna talk about tonight.
Okay. Anybody have any student or instructor or colleague that sticks out of their mind, especially?
Oh, well, I do.
Okay, Paul, let's hear.
We had a guy. When I started, he was a green belt, and he had studied, I think, Shotokan before, and he was the cousin of one of our brown belts, or I think he may have been black belt by then. But anyway, when I started, he was a green belt, and you know, a year or so later or whatever, when I was a green belt, he was a green belt, and he stank. I mean, he just, you know, because we have I'm sure you guys have it too, the dojo rules, you know, toenails and fingernails clipped, wash your gi, you know, blah, blah. He never washed his gi. And he had the same gi, I swear, for until he finally got promoted to, I think, Sandan. And my instructor actually went and bought him a gi, gave him the gi, and then, like, when he was, you know, checking it out in the dressing room, grabbed his old gi and threw it in the dumpster.
Now I've got a gi that's like 10 years old that I just, it's my favorite gi, but I wash it. You're talking about he had the same gi, but he never washed it.
He had the same gi. He had one gi, the same gi. He came to class, pretty much every class, never washed it.
Ooh.
And of course, you know, they'd line up, and it would be the great, because we used to line up, you know, you line up according to rank for, like, the first, you know, however many people I have, you know, you double it.
Yeah.
And then it would be everyone else fills in on the other side. Well, since once we got to kind of the same rank, it would be like, oh man, we're getting, you know, it was like jockeying to stay away from him.
But he always had more rank than you, though.
I was going to say, wasn't he at the head of the line because he was the rankest?
Yeah. Oh, very punny. He was, and you know, he was a nice guy, and he didn't really have a, he really couldn't. He wasn't a really good martial artist. He was dedicated, and he came to class, and he kind of listened, but, like, you know, you would tell him something, and he'd kind of like, okay, and then he would kind of do it the opposite way. But just the worst thing is he just reeked. And, you know, but you can't, I mean, you'd go to the instructor and say, man, he stinks. And they would try and handle it at their level. So it was a challenge to try and, you know, work out and focus on what you're doing with a guy who just stinks.
And there was, and you tried to do something, but there was nothing that could be done, really?
No. You know, you talk to him about it, and he would say, okay, and then maybe he would wash his gi, but I don't think he did. I think he may have just thrown it in the dryer or something. But, I mean, his gi was, like, threadbare. I mean, you could, like, see through it. You could see, like, his chest hair through it. You could see. Mm-hmm. So, finally, at the end, you know, like I say, he, and then my instructor, when they promoted him to Shodan, just because he'd been there for so long, and when he was changing out with the new gi that they got him, he went and grabbed the old gi and threw it in the dumpster. Mm-hmm. And then he went out and got it out of the dumpster. The guy went and dug it out of the dumpster.
Did anyone ask him why he was reluctant to wash his gi? I mean, was he afraid that, you know, the I don't know, maybe he was superstitious and some, you know, good training spirits would be washed out of the gi or something like that?
Well, the only story I got from him was, you know, that was his first gi. He started training in Shotokan when he was in the army in, like, Germany or something like that. And that was his first gi. And, you know, so in his mind, you know, he said, like, oh, well, this is what I started with, and, you know, da-da-da. And I'm kind of like, cool, because I had the same gi. You know, I'm kind of like, UP, I had my first gi. I wore that. That was the only gi I had. But, yeah, I washed it before every class. And then, but at the end, it was, you know, you could see my underwear through it. I mean, it was time to get a new gi, so.
My first gi was given to me by Shihan John Druin. And it was a black gi. And although I washed it religiously, you know, they do wear out. I forget what brand it was, but it was a decent brand, you know. It was to the point where it was just basically threadbare. So I'm kind of superstitious, so I cut a small portion of the gi and sewed it on to the lining of a new gi. And I did that for like about two or three gis. So I had worn it by the time I think I was almost a black belt, and when I still had part of that gi attached to the inside of my gi. I don't know why I did that. Looking back on it, it was kind of probably kind of stupid, but it meant something to me at the time.
No, I thought that was kind of cool.
But at least my gi was washed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty. Gene, do you guys wear black gi in your dojo or?
Well, we wear white gis, all white gis, or all black gis. But during camps, promotion ceremonies, seminars, demonstrations, you only wear white gis.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I wear a black gi most of the time. I don't know. I just like black better than white.
Good guys wear black.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I got my second gi, the one that I got. I was in San Diego, and it was kind of like kismet because, like, literally at the beginning of the class, the head instructor in San Diego wasn't there, but one of the other black belts was like, you know, came to me and said, like, you know, hey, Paul, we can see through your gi, and I'm like, really? And then, you know, I was wearing boxer shorts, and, you know, nothing bad, but I was like, well, man, I gotta get a new gi. And then that evening, the head instructor walked in, and he just said something, said, hey, Paul, what size gi do you wear? And I said, 5. And he goes, oh, well, you know, some people ordered, we generally wear Shiredo gi. And he said, which is the best gi on the planet, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone else is wrong. And he said, yeah, we just got this Shiredo in for somebody, and it didn't fit them, or I forgot what the deal was. So he gave it to me for like $40. And Shiredo heavyweight gis, they're like 130, 140. And it was a white top with black bottoms. And in our style, generally, you can wear black bottoms at Shodan as long as nobody else is wearing it, you know, of an upper rank. And that was my second gi, and I still have it today, and it's still in great shape. And it's, you know, yeah, it's always my little misty kind of. I'm waiting to see for it to explode at some point, but it hasn't.
Shiredo gis are good. They wear like iron, but. Juka gis are also pretty good. I've got a couple of them. Have you ever heard of them, Paul?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of those.
Yeah, they're a good gi. And then Sensei Ernie DeCaro, our jiu-jitsu instructor, turned me on to, what's the name of that gi, Pete, that he got for us?
Oh, I forget.
It's got the vents in under the arms.
Is that it's from Tsunami?
Yeah, Makaido or something like that? I think it starts with an M. It'll come to me. They're also a good gi too. But you know, like any, you know, they can stink up pretty fast. You wear them for a couple of workouts.
Oh yeah. Well, my gi, my favorite gi is, it's a Shiredo. It's a medium weight. It feels like a heavyweight, but it's a medium weight, and I sweat like a pig in it. So I have to clean it. I mean, you can't not clean. I don't understand not cleaning your gi.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like when we go to camp, you know, you bring, and I'm sure you guys do, you bring every gi you have.
Yeah.
You know, and generally, I'll go through like two or three tops a day. You know, the pants, generally not so bad, unless you get like a really huge workout where, you know, maybe you sweat down to your gi pant. But normally, it's the jacket. I'll change out the jacket. Because, by the end of the day, it's stinky. Or I'll bring another one with me just in case. But and those Shiredos, when they soak up, yeah, they get to weigh like 1,000 pounds.
Yeah.
They chafe.
Yeah. So
now, but they're still the best.
Oh, definitely. Now, another type of person that we come across in the dojo is the person that puts in as little effort as possible. In my experience, they're usually teenagers, for whatever reason.
That's the one on my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, if I wanted somebody to throw spaghetti at me instead of a punch, I mean, I would have worked in a kitchen. It frustrates me. And after that, I'd like to talk about the other extreme to it. But it frustrates me because I'm trying my hardest, especially more and more lately, I'm picturing real attacks as I do my martial art lately, like the past 5 years. And it's hard for me to really work my hardest when the punch coming at me is so weak and so limp that when I block it, I mean, I just knock it and the person looks at you like, what are you doing blocking so hard?
Hmm. Well, that can definitely slow down your training. And, you know, it might indicate that the person is just either not motivated or disinclined for one reason or another to be there. How do you handle that, Pete?
Well, you know, I wish I had a better way. It's not only my training it throws off. It's my mental my frame of mind. Because instead of concentrating on my karate, I'm stewing about how I wish this guy would punch and block a lot better. Usually I'll say something to the person. I'll tell them they got to step up, or I'll punch a little bit harder so that they have to block, and hope that they get the message that they have to block hard and they have to punch hard. When they're doing kata, if I'm correcting, if it's a lower belt and I'm correcting, I'll correct them to. I'll let them know my displeasure by correcting them a little more than I would anybody else. I don't know if that's right or wrong.
No, I think it's exactly the way it should be. We had, and I agree with you, Pete, that I've seen it more in teenagers and youngins more so than adults. But and I did the same thing with one of our green belts. Actually, one of our instructors, it was one guy that we kind of expected from him. His parents were kind of making him come, and so he kind of liked it, but he only liked it when he liked it, kind of thing. And one class, our instructor was like, just go sit in the corner. You're not helping anybody. And we were doing Ippon Kumite, and he's like, just go sit down. And it didn't really help because he didn't really want to be there anyway. But, you know, that's about the only thing he can do. When he was doing his kata one day, you know, we were doing, you know, Pinan Nidan or something. And he was kind of stepping through it, and he had no focus in his blocks, no focus in his punches. And I told him, I said, look, you know, you need to focus, you need to do whatever. And he goes, well, I'm bored with this kata, I know it. And I was just kind of like, oh, it's on. And I'm like, oh, you know it, do you? Start. And I counted, and every count I would stop and adjust his stance and adjust his hands and adjust whatever and, you know, everything. And I tore him down, and I was like, you know, you don't know this kata. I don't know this kata, and I've been doing it for 15 years. I said, you know, you need to focus, or you're wasting everybody's time, and you just wasted, like, 15 minutes of mine, you know, which, of course, I asked for it because I knew where it was going. So anyway, but I think with those kind of people, the only thing you can do is bring it up to them and say, like, look, you need to focus. I mean, as an instructor, you definitely need to do it. I think as a lower belt, if I was with someone, you know, my rank or higher, well, my rank I wouldn't be so concerned, but higher than my rank, or, you know, someone who's chronic like that, I would take it to whoever the head instructor was, if it wasn't my class, and say, you know, that person is not giving it out. And usually they know anyway, but and kind of leave it to them. But yeah, I agree with you, Pete. I just, you know, say, like, hey, you know, or, you know, what I used to do sometimes is I would say, like, hey, punch a little bit harder, I want to try something.
Yeah,
and that can pique their interest, and they're like, well, what's he going to do? And I'm like, yeah, just punch us a little bit harder. Focus a little more towards, you know, my center or whatever. And then see if they do it, and then they go, no, it didn't work. Try it again.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. Now, another this isn't even the other extreme. This is, I find this a lot with when I'm working, like, with people that have taken it for, say, 2 years or less, or even a year or less. when you're doing a prescribed drill and you're going slow, and those, because you're going slow, they can obviously do a lot of things, a lot of defense moves that otherwise they couldn't. And even when I was a brown belt, black belt, I get people that are white or whatever, different styles is different, but one above white. And they'll say, well, you know, I could do this. And they don't grasp the idea that you're going slower, so everything is slowed down.
Well, I think that as an instructor, or even just as a fellow student, that you just have to remind them that, you know, in the beginning when we're learning a new drill or technique or whatever, and we're practicing it, we go slow, and as we get better, then we can add a little bit more to the training, to the ferocity and whatever, you know, and just to remind them to do that. And if they don't comply, then, you know, bring it to the instructor's attention.
Yeah.
Is that what you did?
Well, yeah, but, this is a constant thing, because it's like people don't understand that you're going slower. So, of course, you know, they can switch their stances because you're going at half or even, you know, or even quarter speed. So, of course, they can change their stance because they're working in real time and you're working in, you know, in a slower time.
I've only seen that with people. Usually when I'm teaching class, like when I taught at the university, we would have, you know, people who, you know, do just enough martial arts to be dangerous, or, you know, knew maybe a little more than they needed to know, or, you know, stuff like that. And so when I demonstrate a technique, you know, and we do it on them, yeah, they'd be like, oh, but I can do this and counter it. And I'm like, well, yeah, but you also know what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So what I would do is I'd say, okay, I'm going to come at you again. Are you ready? And they'd say, yeah, and I would do a different technique, but like at the same speed. And then they go, you didn't do the same technique? I said, yeah, because you don't know what I'm going to do. This is a drill.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I, sometimes they got it, sometimes they wouldn't, you know. And, but I've never really seen that so much with people in my class that, you know, that I've trained with that know what I have seen is people who are kind of, you know, they're kind of bored by it, and they're kind of, you know, they're kind of half-hearting the blocks. They're not the other guy, not the other degree, who just doesn't care about being there, but it's kind of like, we've done this technique a million times. I'm not paying attention to it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
There was a thread on, I think it was on our forum, and it might have been on Akiyoshi Robert Hurton's forum, about the importance of basics and how it's important for the upper ranks to show the lower ranks the importance of paying a close attention to your basics. And I think with students like you guys are describing, they think, well, I know the basics, I'm beyond that, let's get to the more, you know, the more advanced stuff, you know, stuff that's more in keeping with my rank here, whatever color belt I got around my waist, you know, and we've done the basics. We did them in the beginning of class as a warm-up, you know, it's for the babies, you know, those are baby techniques, you know, and that you can tell you're dealing with a beginner then.
Yeah.
You know, so again, I think it's important for the instructors to instill upon students like that the importance of this drill is a bit mundane, important, and here's, you know, just my take. I just remember the name of that gi was Meijin, M-E-I-J-I-N.
Yes.
Yeah, it's on the Tsunami website.
Yeah, I got somebody gave me a subscription to that magazine, and it's good. It's a good magazine, and I saw that gi and I started reading about it. I was like, man, that looks like it's well constructed and whatnot. And then I think the next seminar I went to, one of our Udansha had one, because as soon as he did a high block or something, and I could see the vent holes, and I'm like, hey, is that, you know, that my Jingi? And he's like, oh yeah, you know, dude, this is great.
Yeah,
and he really liked it. So
I do too. As a matter of fact, my next gi is probably going to be another Meijin. I like it a lot. And the only thing is, I can't dry it. I got to just hang it up to dry it, because they do tend to shrink a little bit.
Oh, okay.
I also wear a size 5, and I like the gi jacket to be a little bit big. I washed it and dried it, threw it in the dryer. Of course, it's a cotton canvas blend, and uh-huh. and it shrunk up a little more than I wanted it to. So be careful. If you like these My Jin geese, they're great geese. Just wash them as you regularly would, but hang them up on the line, or don't throw them in the dryer.
But get them a cut big. Yeah. I got a black gi, my first new full black gi last year or whatever, and I got it. My instructor said, like, well, they shrink up a little bit, so get it one size, a little bit bigger, and just half size bigger. And so I got it, and the gi jacket is, it's like a tent. I washed that thing in hot water and dried it and super hot, and I can't get it to shrink up anymore. So I'm kind of like, well, I'm just going to kind of look wee in that thing.
So. Is it a Shiredo?
No, it's a Kamikaze. And they're not bad gi either. And what I found today, emailing somebody from that MySpace page that was interested in the class out here, and they asked how much a gi costs, and so I just ballparked it and said, $25 and for a student gi. But then I went on the internet and I kind of was searching around, and I found a site that had clearance. And you know what a Tokaido gi is?
Oh, yeah. Good geese.
They're like $180 or something like that.
Yeah.
They were clearing them for $20.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Student geese?
They're heavyweight gi.
Whoa.
Oh my god.
Regular price, $195, but they were like size 3, size 4. It was an overrun that, so I was like, dang it, because I was getting ready to pounce.
Yeah.
You couldn't squeeze into a 4?
I could, but it wouldn't be pretty. That one good kick, even though we only kick knee high or, waist high, I'd definitely be key high.
Another type of person, and Gene, you really haven't added anybody, but I'll give one more. Another type of person is the one that comes at you so hard and with such intensity that your bones are going to ache. That's a good thing, but it's not a good thing night after night after night. I don't know, maybe that's just me.
Some people might say I'm that kind of a person. Because when you're working with the lower ranks, I tend to take it easy. But when I'm working with you or Renshi Tony Musso or Corey or Ernie DeCaro, I tend to go pretty hard.
But you make me step up, but you have control. I'm talking about, there's nobody in our dojo that I don't think has ever done this. I'm talking about when I've been at seminars or whatever. The person that comes at you hard but doesn't have control. So you know that if you don't make that block, you're going to get hit. I know with you that if I make a mistake, I'm not gonna pay for it in ways I don't wish I hadn't. But there are people that have come at me that if you don't make that block, you're going to, have a rib broken or something.
Hmm. Well, and the good news is that they're training with enthusiasm.
That's a word for it.
That's honest to goodness Shugyo training, but
I think the last time I had somebody do that was actually my instructor, and he came. I invited him to where I was teaching at the university, and we were doing blocks. And I don't know what I was doing. I think I was just kind of checking people out, just making sure that the people I was teaching were, because we had people from my class come in. Our dojo come in and kind of run them through, I want to say this is what a martial art class kind of looks like. We did the whole bowing in and bowing out and all that stuff like that, so that way they can get a feel for it. And anyway, I was kind of looking at my students, kind of, making sure everybody was kind of keeping up. And I was one-stepping with my instructor, and he threw a punch, and it nailed me right in the chest. I'm like, ow, and he goes, you're not blocking. You better start blocking. And he was just right at me every time, and I was blocking for my life, because he nailed me twice before I started focusing up. But I was like, hey, I'm trying to pay attention, but what am I going to say? It's my sensei. Am I going to be like, you can't do that? And he was just making an object lesson of stay focused, no matter what's going on. But we've had a guy, he came in when I was a green belt, I think. He was a black belt in an Ishindu, and he was a black belt in judo. And he was a recent black belt in judo, so that's really kind of where he was. And, man, he was hardcore, because he had karate background, he had judo background. And one time he rushed in and wrapped me up in a bear hook and squeezed me so tight, I thought my head was going to burst, because he was a big, strong guy. And then when he let me go, I had this huge headache, and I almost passed out because all the blood rushed out of my head.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, And our instructor at the time, Buck, was he went to him and he said, you know, you got to go kind of easy. And he's like, well, you know, I'm used to training hard. And Buck, and it was just one of those moments where he goes, like, you want to train hard? Okay. After class, we'll train hard. And after class, they towed up and sparred. And we were at the time training in a community room of a church, and so we had like all the pews on the side of the room, and it was a big concrete floor. And of course, he's kind of a judo guy, so he's going to go to the ground, and Buck could go to the ground, and they went all over there, tripping over pews, and you know, just and you could hear the strikes. I mean, they were hitting each other, and Buck knew how to hit people. And it was ugly. It was like 15 minutes of ugliness that we just sat there. We all just kind of watched it. And then after that, Stacy, who was the guy, he kind of calmed down a little bit. And
good.
Buck let him know, you know, yeah, we can train hard. We just choose not to train so hard that we can't go home, you know, and go to work the next day.
Right. On a related note, one thing, a combination that doesn't mix very well is the martial arts and steroids. Now, before Peter, this is before you started at the dojo. As a matter of fact, I was a white belt at the time.
Okay.
And there was an orange belt. His first name was Charlie. Let me describe this guy. He was half my age and twice my size. He was a male model and an avid steroid user, bodybuilder, you know. And the guy was strong as an ox. Never met a mirror he didn't like, and was just, I mean, there was no control in this guy. And you could tell where he was in his cycle, you know, his steroid cycle, because, you know, wherever they get, like, the real aggression, you know, you could see that coming. And he'd go into almost like a roid rage during class.
Oh, man.
I don't think there's anybody left still training in our dojo, except for maybe Renshi Tony that might remember him. But this Charlie and I were working on. Paul, do you guys do a bow drill called Bowtie Shirenso? Uki?
No, we have one called Bowtie Bow. It's a bow, two man bow drill, sure.
It might be the same thing. But it's an introductory kind of a drill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Charlie and I were paired up, and I'm telling you, this guy just had his way with me. I mean, he would swing his bow down, you know, like he was swinging a sledgehammer down onto me, and I'm just a white belt trying to learn this stuff, you know? Well, you know, you train with this guy, I mean, he would laugh, too. He'd come after you, and he when he would hit you, I mean, you couldn't do the block. You know it was coming, but there was nothing you could do to stop it, and he would hit you, and he'd just laugh, you know? A real arrogant, cocky son of a bitch. I hated the guy. Just absolutely hated him. Well, one day after class, I happened to be walking in the back, and I was talking to, again, it was Shihan Druin, who ran the school at the time. And we were in the back, and we overheard this Charlie talking to a young, impressionable, I don't know, I guess he was about 18 years old, Shodan, trying to get this kid to start taking steroids. You know, the kid was thin and tall, lanky, you know, athletic, but, you know, just wasn't bulked up like Charlie was. And I think Shion overheard it and pulled him aside and said, you're done, you know.
Right on.
You know, so we didn't see much of Charlie afterward. I think he probably would have quit sooner or later because, you know, I mean no disrespect when I say this, but he was a self-centered, egotistical musclehead who was just, you know, all he wanted to do was beat people up and, you know, get some ego gratification out of that, I think. But, man, what an idiot. You know, it was literally, I was terrified to go up against this guy, you know. So I can relate to the lack of control.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's what it all comes down to because, you know, I've seen some of our, you know, senior guys go at it. And I've been in the middle of some going at it, and I don't want to be there anymore. But our head instructor, when I first started, was, without a doubt, short of Master Kisei and Isao Sensei, the best martial artist I've ever seen. He had multiple black belts, like Aikido and Judo. He was a wrestler in school, and he's got a bunch of black belts, a bunch of Okinawan styles. And he would tell somebody, you know, come get me. And he had no fear. You know, and people would come at him, and he would tie him up, and he would move so fast and so hard that when he grabbed you, you were grabbed, and you knew you were done. But he would not go any farther. And he would hit you with a technique, and you would go like, okay, that, yeah, I would have been done. You know, but he had the control. And when I first started learning how to spar, that's the way we sparred. It was all control. We never used pads. We would go at each other pretty hard, but it was controlled.
Well, that's,
you know, we knew when to stop, we knew when to hold back, and you knew when somebody was like, okay, yeah, you would have got me, and we're getting out of hand.
Well, that's all part of being a true martial artist, is showing control. I mean, there's a reason to show control in the dojo, but you have to control on the street. If you're forced into using your art, you have to show control, whether it's control of not punching the wall or whether it's control of controlling your emotion. You still have to be under control, and maybe showing control in the dojo is part of that.
No, yeah. I agree. I think sorry, Gene, go ahead.
I was just going to say I agree too. I the control you have is not just physical but emotional control, you know. And I think that comes with training and the wisdom you get from training hard and practicing your art. It doesn't come, I mean, some people are born with that, you know, a little bit, but of course the martial arts, I think, will temper that even more. But still, you know, I mean, you still get these guys, and I would argue that people like this guy that you're talking about, Paul, the big judo guy, chances are that they're not going to progress very far beyond a shodan, and they might even drop out eventually, you know.
I think he left it first cue in our style. He just, you know, I think he realized after a while. I mean, and the thing about it was, outside of class, or, you know, like, kind of, I guess, short of the sparring side of things, he was a really nice guy. You know, he was a school teacher, and he was, you know, funny, and, you know, but, like, when you kind of got in that sparring mode, a switch flipped, and he was all about, you know, going to town, which, you know, I can kind of see if both parties are about it, but if both parties aren't about it, then the other guy needs to settle the hell down.
Yeah,
but I mean, what triggers it probably is his adrenaline gets going, and your adrenaline will start in situations other than sparring, you know? Mm. And if you got to be able to control that. I mean, suppose you're in a debate, you know, with someone, okay? And they start getting the better of you in the debate. You know, now what are you going to do? Your adrenaline's going. You're going to haul off and punch the guy, you know? I mean, you could be the nicest guy in the world and still have a real temper problem.
Yeah, so the control, the physical control in the dojo relates to emotional and mental control.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's part of, you know, one of the things of martial arts, and I also think in defense of traditional martial arts, which may be in an upcoming episode, is, you know, being able to take control back of a situation. You know, I was in an altercation with a guy, and, you know, he was all keyed up and ready to go, and I felt fairly certain he was going to swing on me. And kind of at that moment, I was just like, oh, okay. Yeah, and I was remarkably calm. You know, and tensions were rising at that point, but there was that one point where I kind of went like, I'm fairly sure he's going to swing on me, and I'm going to have to control this.
And, the difference between you and this gentleman you referred to earlier is that, you know, you have the patience and the wisdom, you know, and the knowledge and the self-control to handle a situation like that effectively, whereas this other gentleman, as nice a guy as he might have been, would probably be ready to, you know, start throwing down, you know, just like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, secretly, yeah, I kind of wanted to, you know, knock him on his butt, but I didn't. But I think I took control of the situation again. I took and I teach that in self-defense, and I'm sure you guys do to some degree, if not exactly the same degree, is, you know, you have to take the initiative away from them. If once you've taken that away from them of, like, you know, I'm going to beat this guy up, once you realize, hey, this guy may beat me up, and then get yourself prepared for it mentally, you know, granted, you don't always have that time, but you've just taken that away from them. Because now you're setting yourself up, you know, distance-wise or whatever you need to do to secure that threat?
It takes a calm mind to kind of be in that position and say, you know, what does this person want? You know, how can I get out of this? You know, let him out of this gracefully, or how can I get out of this gracefully? Or how can I avoid, you know, any injury? And, you know, sometimes it's just acknowledging, yes, okay, you're right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have taken your parking space, I'll move, you take it, and, you know, now you don't have to worry about any kind of an altercation.
Well, that's just it. You've got to think rationally in an irrational situation.
And I would argue, again, just kind of dovetailing off of Paul's earlier comment or reference to the traditional martial arts and how we might be talking about that, I would argue that when you see fists and feet and elbows and knees coming at you hundreds of times per class over the span of many years, somehow the thought that seeing one punch come at you, it just doesn't, it's not quite as intimidating.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, I'm not, that's not to say that we as martial artists should feel very secure in a physical confrontation. You know, quite the opposite. We should try to avoid it at every opportunity. You know,
and I also think that if you know, if you read a lot of the boards, especially if you read, like, you know, Bullshido and some of the other boards where they talk about live training, I think that if your martial art doesn't have the fists and elbows and feet coming at you on a fairly regular basis, you're missing the whole boat. Because, yeah, that's what, you know, it's, you know, the theory martial artist of, you know, if someone punches at me, I do this. Well, you know, when that fist comes at you, if you don't actually have done it in some way, even if it's in a controlled drill environment where you get that muscle memory down, but, you know, that's one of the reasons we do kote-ate, is to get used to being hit, you know, get used to blocking something and feeling, you know, a muscle hit a muscle, you know, and feel that way your body jars and feel the way your adrenaline kicks in when that happens. And if you aren't used to that, you know, if your style doesn't show, you know, I don't say you have to have sparring every class, and you don't have to have, you know, full contact, you're putting on all the BOGO gear and going to town, but if you don't have someone grabbing you, you know, with some force and holding on to you and making you do a technique, you're not going to get anything out of it, and you're not going to be prepared when that fist does come at you.
And
like the old saying goes, everyone has a plan until they get hit.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that gets back to the first type of person that I talked about, the one that comes at you half-hearted or half whatever. And it's, they're almost, well, I guess they are insulting you when they come at you and not with some sort of, with some amount of force. Because
they're going to be the guy who is going to go, hey, this doesn't work, and quit the class.
Yeah. But they're not giving you what you need to hone your skills either.
Right. Right, yeah, it's all part of training. I mean, if you want to do something like that, if you want to study a martial art, you know, but don't want any good hard physical, you know, contact or training, then you know, go study Tai Chi or something.
Hey, now, I got hit by my Tai Chi instructor, and he knocked me in my butt. He was doing. Right. Have you guys ever practiced Tai Chi?
No, obviously not.
Obviously not. Well, I'm not saying that it's, you know, there's a clip on the internet which you can probably find if you just go on YouTube or whatever, and it was Tai Chi sparring. And that's what it was. It was them doing techniques, like, really slow, and then they'd hit the guy, and, like, the guy would spit blood out, like in a kung fu movie, you know, moving really slow. But my instructor, he's really good. He was, like, a silver medalist in China, you know. I mean, okay. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, all right, I get that. But I was really kind of taking it just for the, you know, the fluidity and the health benefits and whatnot. I really wasn't thinking of it as a martial art. But I would tell the instructor, because, you know, they'd ask who does what and blah blah blah, and I was the only person in that class that had ever studied martial arts, and so somebody would ask, and he would always practice on me. He'd say, okay, well, here, this is what it is, and there's a technique called wave hands like clouds, where you're just kind of moving side to side, and you're kind of using your forearm sort of as the blocking experience. And he was moving at Tai Chi pace, and he, you know, moved a little bit closer to me and a little bit closer to me, demonstrating the technique, and then he hit me at Tai Chi speed, you know, in the chest, and I felt like I got hit by a train. Hmm. And he knocked me on the ground. And I really don't, I think Tai Chi is great, and I practice it when I can, and I've really kind of incorporated a lot of the concepts in the doing my kata, but I don't really see it as a martial art, but it's there, but I think you have to dig a lot for it. But Tai Chi does have techniques in there, but I think you have to foster it more than you do, say, with a tradition.
Well, I stand corrected. I mean, I didn't realize. The only Tai Chi I've seen is, people doing the exercises, and they're usually elderly people in China or something.
And they can your butt, let me tell you.
Well, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. And I know it's a martial art, but my interpretation, and I could be wrong, was that it was more fluid, more forms, and the reason for the art was more for internal health, okay, and for breathing, the respirations, what have mm-hmm. you. You know, I didn't see. I mean, I think that if you had two martial artists, someone who studies Tai Chi and someone who studies, you know, jiu-jitsu or karate or something mm-hmm. like that, you know, I think you would say that the latter artist was the one who trains more violently, you know.
Oh, so I will completely agree with that. Yeah, there was and actually the way they told me to increase your workout in Tai Chi was to just bend your knees more, you know, because you put more of the pressure on your knees, on your quads and whatnot, and you can get a really good workout doing Tai Chi. Mm. You know, you just have to kind of, I had a rush of Tai Chi. I learned the short form, and I kind of applied a lot of the concepts to my kata and to karate in general. I really slowed down doing a lot of my techniques since I started doing Tai Chi.
Well, I mean, you know, like many Americans, I'm not familiar with it, and you know, I'm unenlightened, so I'm going to have to I'm definitely going to have to research that.
Yeah, so, I'm telling you. It made a lot of difference in my kata, my breathing, my stance, because you're going so slow, you're really paying attention to what you're doing, you're paying attention to where your hands are, where your feet are, where your spine is, where your hips are, and I apply that to my kata and to drills and everything else, and it made a huge difference, I thought.
Yeah. I'll definitely look into that more. I mean, no disrespect to any Tai Chiists out there, and you know, but, you know, we'll hear about it. You know, they'll post on the forum or send us an email or something, and that's fine. They can cuss me out.
Yeah, well,
but they'll do it very slowly. One guy came up with another guy in the dojo, but it's really not the guy in the dojo. It's the guy in the other dojo. It's people at camp or at a seminar that maybe study your style. And whatever's being taught by whatever instructor that's not theirs is really not the way it's supposed to be done.
Oh, yeah.
That drives me up a wall because, you know, it's like, guys, we all do the same stuff. He's doing it in a different order. He's saying something maybe just a little bit differently than you do. Let it slide. It's the camp, and Master Kisei doesn't have a problem with it.
Yeah. It's just different.
Or insert your head instructor of choice.
Yeah, but we've gone to camp and things have been a little bit different. And when I did it at first, I used to get frustrated because I would immediately want to do it the new way, or do it the different way, even if it wasn't try to do it whatever the different way. And then I just realized it's just two ways of doing something, so it's just. I've talked previously about having a toolbox. It's just one more item in my toolbox. Instead of doing a middle block this way, it's doing a middle block with a little bit of difference. And you never know when you're going to need that.
Yeah.
I think we're all egocentric to a bit, you know, to a certain extent. And we're all going to have a loyalty to the way we first learn things, you know. So it takes a mature individual, in my opinion, to rise above that and to be open to say, gee, you know, this middle block, it seems to be a bit more efficient than the one I had learned previously. Or, you know, I'm going to have to study this a little bit more and you know, just keep an open mind about things. But many martial artists, regardless of style, are just so married to their art and they won't consider anything else. They won't consider, you know, maybe supplementing that art with a different art, or even looking at a subsystem within their own system, and see how techniques are done in that other subsystem.
Well, where I was going with it, actually, and yeah, I agree completely with you, Gene. You've got to be open to, you know, different interpretations, different, you know, and I was commenting to somebody in another podcast out there about, you know, you can't say that, you know, you can take stuff from another style. You can take a concept from a certain style, like, say, Tai Chi, for example, and you can apply it to your art that you're studying without going, oh, crap, I've got to change this art. I've got to change it. I've got to create a new style. I've got to do something, you know. You can incorporate that. There's nothing really new under the martial arts sun. There's no, you know, you're not really, I don't think anybody in the last, you know, 50 years, to be generous, has come up with anything new in the martial arts. I mean, I know the Gracies have come up, but they're doing jiu-jitsu. Yeah, they're doing their own little flavor of jiu-jitsu. They're changing a few things. But I think if you look globally, those techniques are in somebody's art somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's got to be. It's just a different way of implementation of that move.
You know, everyone does, you know, we do bow, you guys do bow. We may do it a little bit differently, you may do it a little bit differently. But, you know, you can't really say, like, oh, man, you know, if I came and trained with you guys and you did bow just a little bit differently than me, but I was like, you know, that's a good way to block. I would never, you know, I wouldn't say, like, well, I've got to abandon my style. Yeah. I've got, you know, I would have to say, you know, hey, I'm just going to start blocking that way. You know, as long as it's not radically different, you can just put it in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, you can, like, add things, okay, to what you do from another style or another system, okay, and still be true to your own system if you want to be, you know? I mean, again, I guess what I'm trying to say is that you have to be open-minded. You have to consider all different opinions, you know, before you settle on what's right for you. Now, okay, I'm 5'5", I weigh 150 pounds, okay? What works for me isn't necessarily going to work for, you know, somebody that's 6'5", 250, or a little woman who's maybe 5 feet tall and 100 pounds soaking wet, you know?
But you can still learn that technique. You can still teach that technique.
Yeah.
And it's not going to hurt anybody.
Well,
I mean, there's techniques I can't do.
Well, absolutely. Teach the technique and say, okay, you might have to vary this depending on your size, your gender, your strength, your age, you know, how well physically conditioned you are, that kind of stuff. But it's still, it's the same block. You're just changing a little bit, but you're still being true to your style.
But, well, this may be more apropos when we talk more about, in depth about traditional martial arts, but Okinawa is a Zen country, or a Zen prefecture, whatever, and in the Zen tradition, whatever, they'll incorporate whatever it seems practical. I mean, that's just the way Zen Buddhism is. And in martial arts, I can't see these guys, say, 150, 200 years ago, somebody coming from another school and saying, no, that's not from my school, I'm not going to, you know, we don't do it that way. If it works, they might incorporate it.
Yeah, because that's why, if you look at the history of martial arts, I mean, the Okinawans were seafaring people. They went to China, you know, they went to Japan, they saw stuff, people came to Okinawa, they went like, I'm taking that.
Yeah, because that's what, you know, not to get too much into it, but that's what, the way it is over there. I mean, here we have a lot of people in a lot of schools saying, well, you can't do it that way because it's not part of our structure, it's not part of the way we were taught. Well, if whatever style you're talking about, if the originator of that style was alive today, he'd be saying, well, why couldn't you?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think this is a really good thread to go into maybe next week with, you know, a defensive, or, you know, a later podcast of traditional martial arts as it is, because I think that's one of the problems that are, I think there's a lot of people out there who think that's what they have to do. They think they have to go and create a new style or go abandon the style they're at because, you know, there's something else over here that seems a little more attractive and a little more, you know, I think there's a lot of people who are really willing to cut loose a traditional martial art because And
they think it's
because
dead.
Because they think they have to. Yeah, well, they think it's dead, and they think maybe there's something else that's, you know, just a little more effective, or it's maybe in their minds they're going like, well, I can't study this anymore because I've got to go do this other thing, which is really great.
Well, sure, especially now, because with the prominence of the mixed martial arts tournaments today, you'll see a lot of, especially younger people, and people who are prospective martial arts students will say, geez, you know, those guys are some of the toughest guys in the world, and I bet they don't even know one kata. So what does kata do for you? You know, I mean, it doesn't seem, it's like dancing. You know, it doesn't do anything. What are you going to do? Somebody attacks you, you're going to do a kata on them? You know, I mean, how many times have we heard that?
Yeah.
So yeah. I think this is the preface to a good discussion next week on defense of traditional martial arts. What do you think?
And that sounds good. That's what we'll talk about. Well, we actually have a topic for next week.
And just to get back to my original thought when I was talking about the person at the camp, what I really meant was someone who is, I mean, and this has literally happened to me. We were doing one-step techniques, and the person I was working with was looking at the instructor, who was neither of our instructors. It was just somebody. They said, okay, lead these techniques. And they were like, you know, I'm punching them, and they're going like, oh, this isn't the right order.
Well.
And they were so wrapped up with what the order of the technique was, more so than the fact that, hey, I'm swinging at you, and you need to block it. So that was the person that drives me nuts. So.
Well, was it a younger person?
No, she was actually it was a female person who was slightly older than me. We were the same rank, and I was just like, you know, this isn't that important.
It's just I'm in my mid-40s. By now, I mean, I'm not surprised at anything. If somebody says it's different, it's different. I could see in my 20s saying, not understanding why it would be different, but not when you're a little bit older.
Well, anyway, thanks again for listening to podcast number 27 from Karate Cafe. Next week, hope you'll join us for a rousing discussion of traditional martial arts, relevant or not relevant. Anyway, this is Gene Myers.
Pete Chambeau.
Paul Wilson.
Thanks a lot for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You can reach us at karatecafe@gmail.com.
Or you can post on our forums. The web address is www.karatecafe.com. Also, Paul Wilson has a MySpace site. It's at www.myspace.com/kenshinkan. KenShinkan. Okay. www.myspace.com/kenshinkan for Paul Wilson. Is that about it, Pete?
That's about it, Gene. And next week, I'm looking forward to next week. I've got some thoughts on it already. We've gone off our topic tonight, but that's par for the course for us, to borrow a golf metaphor for karate. And I think next week should be interesting. If anybody's got some ideas beforehand, email us.
Or post on the website.
Yeah.
But, I mean, going off topic is what normal people do, you know? I mean, and we're just average martial artists who like talking about it and hope that you like listening to it and may even talk to us about it, too. So
yeah.
I'm Gene Myers, and for Pete Chambeau and Paul Wilson, good night.